Our study is continuing this time in the 20th chapter of 1 Samuel. We're at the 13th verse. Jonathan and David are discussing what David should do. David's life is in grave danger. Saul is trying to put him to death. He's made several great attempts upon his life, and David's had some narrow escapes. And so now he appeals to Jonathan to be his friend and try to determine what his father's true feelings are. There's a feast day coming. David's going to be absent. And he wants Jonathan to tell him, if my absence makes your father mad, if he's wroth, then that knows my life is still in danger. If he pays no attention to my absence, then that lets me know that maybe he is not wanting to put me to death. And so he's having Jonathan to pledge to him his fidelity, to pledge his loyalty. Jonathan is speaking to David alone out in the field. And he is trying to convince David that he is going to be loyal and he is going to do the right thing. He says, "Then Jonathan said unto David, O Lord God of Israel, when I have sounded my father about tomorrow any time, or the third day, and behold, if there be good toward David, and I then send not unto thee and show it to thee, the Lord do so and much more to Jonathan. When I have found out that this thing is not true, when I found out that everything is safe for you, I'll tell you. If I don't send to you and tell you about it, then the Lord do to me. I'm placing myself in jeopardy also if I do not do this." And he further says in verse 13, "But if it please my father to do the evil, then I will show it thee and send thee away, that thou mayest go in peace. And the Lord be with thee as he hath been with my father." So whether I find out good or evil, I'm going to tell you. If it's evil that he's going to do to you, then I'll let you know that also. I'll send you away. I'll get you out of here. I'll get you into a safe place. And my desire is for the Lord to be with you as he hath been with my father. And it seemed that Jonathan may even have some reference here to the fact that David is going to be king, that David is destined to be king. And just as Saul at one time had the blessings of God and the things that he did because he was a faithful king, even so, Jonathan now implores and desires that this same thing be true with David. And Jonathan believes so strongly that David is going to be the king, that David is going to replace his father, that the family of David is going to replace his family so far as the kingdom goes, that he makes a covenant with David at this point. Verse 14, "And thou shalt not only, while yet I live, show me the kindness of the Lord, that I die not, but also thou shalt not cut off thy kindness from my house forever." So what Jonathan is saying here, as long as I live, I want you to promise that you're going to show me the kindness of the Lord. Now he calls it the kindness of the Lord. That is, you show to me the same kindness that the Lord shows. You be of the same nature and same temperament toward me as the Lord is toward those that are his children. And of course we have the Lord as our example for love, as our example for kindness, as our example for doing good. And we're to do good unto each other as the Lord does good to us. We're to forgive as the Lord has forgiven us. And so this is what Jonathan is asking David to do here. To do this while I live. Show me the kindness of the Lord that I die not. So that my life is not put into jeopardy by the upheavals that are yet in the future for this kingdom and for this position of king. But also he says that thou shalt not cut off thy kindness from my house forever, even if I die. I want you to recognize my posterity and to do good to them. Show them kindness. I'm making an agreement with you now to bring that about at a future time. He says, "No, not when the Lord has cut off the enemies of David, everyone from the face of the earth." When you get to the point that you're in supreme power of this kingdom, you don't have any enemies left. You have no one to even challenge you for your authority. Still, I want you to recognize my family, my descendants, and I want you to show them kindness and not forget them. So we see that Jonathan is most concerned about his family, about his offspring, about those that should live after him even when he is no longer around to protect them. And he's imploring David at this time, a time when David needs his help, a time when David is asking him to risk his very life to give him some information and to give him some assistance with Saul. Jonathan is asking David then in return to show kindness to his family. And so verse 16 says, "So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying," here's a covenant between the two, one man with another man, one man's house with another man's house. He made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let the Lord even require it at the hand of David's enemies. And this seems to mean that this would be brought about by the Lord, even those that would be enemies to David would recognize this covenant that is being made here. And Jonathan caused David to swear again because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. Now this implies that it was not just strictly an ulterior motive on the part of Jonathan, that Jonathan had a deep feeling for David. He wanted to have this agreement with David because he loved him. He wanted to be in harmony with David. He wanted to be working for and with the things that would be beneficial to David. And so they made this agreement between the two of them. And he had David to swear that he would bring this about. And he loved him as he loved his own soul. Verse 18. Then Jonathan said to David, tomorrow is the new moon, and thou shalt be missed, because thy seat will be empty. As we remember, there was this feast day coming up, which was to last 2 or 3 days. David would be expected to be there in the presence of Saul, either as a representative of one of Saul's children, since he was married to Saul's daughter, or as one of the captains of the army. And his empty chair would be very obvious. It'd go very muchly noticed. And the test was what Saul's reaction was to David's absence. If Saul was very mad because David wasn't there, then David would know that his life was in danger, because Saul wanted to use that as an occasion to take his life. If Saul didn't seem to mind, then David would know that Saul really didn't feel that strongly about him, and he would feel much safer. And so Jonathan was to get the message to David about this, and this is the method now that Jonathan proposes to be used for him to be able to get the message to David. So he says, thou shalt be missed, because thy seat will be empty. And when thou hast stayed 3 days, then thou shalt go down quickly and come to the place where thou didst hide thyself when this business was in hand, and thou shalt remain by the stone Ezel. So David was to be gone 3 days, whether he was going to Bethlehem to be with his family for their observance of the feast day, we're not sure, but we can assume that he may have gone to Bethlehem, and he would have had time to go in there and gotten back. But he was to come back to this place appointed here by Jonathan, this stone Ezel, and he's to remain in hiding there just in case Jonathan never had a chance to talk to him. Jonathan may have not been able to have approached David because of grave danger. So Jonathan proposes a method by which he can get the intelligence or the message to David without having to actually talk to him. Verse 20, and I will shoot 3 arrows on the side thereof, as though I shot at a mark. Jonathan's going to stand out and shoot arrows as though he were practicing target practice, and he would shoot it to the side of this rock where David is going to be hidden. And behold, I will send a lad, saying, go find out the arrows. He's going to have a lad with him that'll go retrieve the arrows for him. And then he says, if I expressly say unto the lad, behold, the arrows are on this side of thee, take them, then come thou, for there is peace to thee, and no hurt, as the Lord liveth. So it depends on what Jonathan says to the lad who's going to retrieve the arrows as to what kind of a message he's trying to convey to David. If he tells the lad that the arrows are on this side of thee, that is, I didn't shoot them beyond thee, they fell short of thee, then David is to know that it's safety. He can be in peace, there be no hurt, as the Lord liveth. Verse 22, but if I say thus unto the young man, behold, the arrows are beyond thee, that is, I've shot the arrows on the other side of you, then he tells David, go thy way, for the Lord has sent thee away. If I give you that kind of a message, David, it's danger. It looks bad. You don't come out and make yourself known. You do not appear in the court. You leave. You go your way, for the Lord has sent thee away. This is the Lord working through me to give you this message. Verse 23, and as touching the matter which thou and I have spoken of, behold, the Lord be between thee and me forever. As if we never see each other again, if you have to go away and remain in hiding, and somehow or other I get cut off from you, don't forget about the covenant we've made. As touching the matter which thou and I have spoken of, this covenant, remember, the Lord is between thee and me forever. He's going to be the judge. He's going to see that we have carried this out, or we're going to pay the consequences for breaking and violating the covenant that we've made between our families. So you can see how sincere Jonathan is about the covenant. He doesn't want it to be broken or violated. He's very interested in that part of it being carried out, regardless of what happens to him or David. And so he reminds David of that as among the last words that he says before they part. Verse 24, so David hid himself in the field. We see now David has removed himself from the presence of Saul. He no longer is coming back into the court until this time of the feast day comes, so that they can put Saul to the test to see what his true attitude is. And when the new moon was come, the king sat him down to eat meat. So now is the time when they're going to be having the feast. Saul will be there with his company, either his children or the captains of his army. David was expected to be there, and so Saul sat down to eat meat. And the king sat upon his seat as at other times, even upon a seat by the wall. He was in his usual place. And David would have a seat that would be his usual seat. And Jonathan arose, and Abner sat by Saul's side, and David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul spake not anything that day, for he thought, something hath befallen him. He's not clean. Surely he's not clean. Maybe he's done something to make him break a part of the ceremonial law so that he is not qualified to come to the feast today. He has to wait till evening to cleanse himself of whatever the problem is, and then he'll be here tomorrow. For he knew that David was a very strict follower of the law, and this was the only thing that he could rationalize in his mind that would make him miss this feast. And it came to pass on the morrow, which was the second day of the month, and also would be the second day of the feast, that David's place was empty. And Saul said unto Jonathan his son, wherefore cometh not the son of Jesse to meat, neither yesterday nor today? So Saul begins to inquire about David's absence on the second day. He's wondering why David is not there. So he turns to Jonathan and he asks him, why isn't the son of Jesse here? Now this gives away, to some extent, the true feelings of Saul when he calls David the son of Jesse. David was actually his own son-in-law. David was person who had befriended him very muchly in the past. He was one of the esteemed members of the army. But he calls him the son of Jesse, as though he were some stranger. And so he asked Jonathan, why isn't he here? Verse 28, and Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. Now, this is the reason that Jonathan gives to Saul, and it doesn't necessarily have to be something that's not the truth. It may very well be the truth. He asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, let me go, I pray thee, for our family hath a sacrifice in the city. And my brother, he hath commanded me to be there. And now, if I have found favor in thine eyes, let me get away, I pray thee, and see my brethren. So, Jonathan explains that David asks leave of absence. And he did ask Jonathan, which would be the proper line of authority to ask, and that Jonathan had the power to give him permission to leave or not give him permission to leave. And from the tone here, Jonathan is definitely implying that he did let David leave with his permission. And so he concludes by saying, therefore he cometh not unto the king's table. He has a justifiable reason for not being here. He didn't just take leave of absence without getting permission for it. And so everything is in order. That's why he's not here. Verse 30, then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan. So now that Saul sees that he's not going to have an opportunity to get at David during this feast, David's not going to be here, he now turned his anger against Jonathan. He becomes very upset. He loses not only his temper, he loses his reasoning power. He says some things that he certainly should not have said, as many, many persons do when they become angry. He says things that no doubt are going to stay with Jonathan forever. Words that are very degrading to Jonathan. And it's simply because his anger, his wrath, his jealousy has overtaken him. And so that his rage is controlling him rather than his good sense controlling him. So his anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said unto him, thou son of the perverse, rebellious woman. Now some of the commentators say that this phrase implies that Saul is accusing Jonathan's mother of being a harlot. And he's implying that Jonathan is not his true son, and that he is really a son without a father. And he further says, "Do not I know that thou hast chosen the son of Jesse to thine own confusion?" So in this next phrase, he is accusing Jonathan of being a fool. The very idea that you have helped this son of Jesse, that you've helped David, and why this is to your own confusion. This shows that you are a very foolish and unwise person, Jonathan. You're somebody who is confused. You don't know the facts. You don't know what's good for you. The fact that you're helping David. Because, of course, David had been anointed to be the king. And if he were going to be the king, then it means that Jonathan could never be king. And so for Jonathan to help David was only really guaranteeing that Jonathan would not be king. And this is the implication that Saul's making here. You've chosen to help him to thine own confusion. And then he says that under the confusion of thy mother's nakedness. Now this last phrase, the confusion of thy mother's nakedness, implies that he had given the world cause to suspect that he was not the legitimate son of Saul, simply because he had loved the one that Saul hated. And in verse 31 he says, "For as long as the son of Jesse liveth upon the ground, thou shalt not be established, nor thy kingdom." You're just cutting yourself out of what could be yours, Jonathan. You're not very smart at all. And so he accuses Jonathan here, Saul does, of being a fool, a traitor, and an illegitimate son. You see what anger does. You see what extreme means men will go to express themselves in a time of anger. Cutting words, Saul speaking to his own son. And everything that he says here about Jonathan, of course, is not true. But if it were true, it would only be degrading to Saul as well as to Jonathan. So Saul concludes in verse 31, "Wherefore now send and fetch him unto me, for he shall surely die." So he places Jonathan under a command. You go and get him. You bring him to me. He must die. That's my thought. That's my feeling. That's my final conclusion of the matter. And I expect you to help me in it. I do not expect you to give David any more help. You are to be loyal to me. You bring him to me, for he shall surely die. That's the strict order that Jonathan is placed under. And Jonathan answered Saul his father and said unto him, "Wherefore shall he be slain? What hath he done?" So he tries to reason with Saul, even in view of these rash statements that Saul has made, in view of the fact that Saul has definitely turned now against David and there seems to be no way out but the fact that he wants to kill him. Jonathan tries to reason. Why should he be slain? What has he done? Just tell me what the reason is. What's the justification for this extreme feeling against David? And Saul cast a javelin at him to smite him. So there was no reasoning with Saul. Rather than give an answer to Jonathan, rather than try to reason with Jonathan at all, he cast a javelin at him. That seems to be one of his favorite little tricks, is to try to pin somebody to the wall with a javelin. He'd already tried it twice with David and failed, and now he throws one at his own son, Jonathan. Whereby Jonathan knew that it was determined of his father to slay David. Now, whatever doubts Jonathan might have had earlier, and he did have doubts about Saul's intention to kill David, back in the second verse, "And he said unto him, God forbid, thou shalt not die. Behold, my father will do nothing, either great or small, but that he will show it to me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so." That was Jonathan's original feeling. It's just not so. You're not going to be put to death, David. My father's not going to do this. But now we learn that Jonathan knows it for sure. Jonathan knew that it was determined of his father to slay David. He'd had it proven him beyond any shadow of a doubt. Now he was convinced. He was just as convinced as David was. He knew that David's life was in danger. Verse 34, "So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and didn't eat no meat the second day of the month." So we see that the feast now is definitely interrupted. Whatever the enjoyment and pleasure, whatever the association and the good things that would come of this feast day were now definitely interrupted by this fierce anger of Saul, the attempt he made upon Jonathan's life, so that Jonathan left. He didn't eat any more meat that day. He didn't continue with the feast. And the scripture says, "For he was grieved for David because his father had done him shame. He was grieved for David. He was so sorry that his friend David was placed into this very dangerous and upsetting situation of being an object of Saul's wrath. So he was grieved for David because his father had done him shame. Now this action of Saul was a shameful act. This feeling of jealousy that he had, this intense anger and wrath, this hatred, this vile plan to put David to death, these earlier attempts upon David's life were all shame. It was a shame on Saul, and it was also a shame on Jonathan. Many times, our loved ones, fellow members of our family, can behave in such a way that they bring about a shame to us. They are a shame. We have to bear the brunt of those shameful acts. Also, members of the church can behave in such a way in the community that they are a shame to the church. They cast a reflection upon the church. They are a shame to the other members of the church. And so when the other members go out into this same community and have to face the actions of a fellow member of the church that is a shameful thing, even the world knows that they're wrong. The average member of the world wouldn't even be doing these things themselves. Then it is a shame. And it causes grief. It causes us to have grief. We grieve because of the shame that we have to bear. We grieve because of the situation that we seemingly really can't improve. We can't help at all. We grieve because the name of God is brought down and is made a mockery in the eyes of the world. Those of us who should be setting an example to the rest of the world find ourselves then having the world set an example for us because of the shameful actions of one or two who claim to be members of the church. So Jonathan has to go to his very best friend David and say, "Yes, David, you were right. My father is trying to kill you. My father has murder in his heart. Your life is in danger, and you must flee." No wonder Jonathan was grieved and had a sense of shame. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.